This is the Roundtable Podcast, Episode 7. Hello, everyone. I'm Dave Robison.
And I'm Brian Humphrey.
And you're listening to the Roundtable Podcast.
Each week, we invite writers to come on the show and pitch their story ideas to Dave and I and our esteemed guest host.
And once we get that taken care of, we dig into it. We dive into the story, root through, digging through for gold and treasure and silver and wondrous things, trying to... God, I just kind of riffed that one totally out of the water.
Yeah,
I'm going, where
okay.
are you going with this, Dave? But ultimately, the goal is to transform that raw idea into a polished diamond of literary gold. And again, I'm mixing my minerals.
That's fabulous, though. Well, we're transcending gold at this point and just going for diamonds.
Going right to diamond, yes. The periodic table, screw it. We're going to pitch that sucker right out the window.
That's right.
How you been, B?
I've been okay. I've been kind of sick, but nobody wants to hear about that.
That's right. And, we really don't.
Yeah, and so I hear that your grandkids are in town, but first I wanted to ask you, how's the weather out there, Dave?
Dude, no, nix on the damn weather. Holy crap. You are just messing with me because we just got done talking about how every show, hey, how's the weather? It's like, really? Is that the best we can do? Well, yes, exactly. My granddaughters are in town this week, and I give a big shout out to both of them, I got to tell you, Brian, this is a transformative moment for me because I was actually able, or actually haven't yet, but I will before they leave. I'm going to be able to sit down with my granddaughter and talk about the Hunger Games with her.
Ooh.
And you know, this is just something that's so freaking cool to actually have been there when somebody was born, see this little infant baby and playing the games and playing with the Fisher-Price toys. And then over the years, watching both of them grow and turn into young people and then suddenly find common ground.
Right.
I mean, this girl's out on Goodreads and she's throwing down some serious, serious reviews for all kinds of books. This kid's going to be, we're going to have her on the show before too darn long.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, under your tutelage.
Under my mastery. Yes.
There's no end to what she will become.
You're a gentleman and a scholar, sir. Thank you. We'll pick up your contract for another year. That's great.
I didn't necessarily say that was a good
thing. Well, let's get on to some good things, shall we?
Yeah, that's right. Let's do it.
Let's absolutely do that. Folks, it is our distinct pleasure to have a gentleman on the Skype line with us to help us on this episode of the Roundtable Podcast. Author of the multi-award-winning Murders at Avedon Hill, master architect of Specfic Media, host and producer of the Beyond the Wall podcast, and general transmedia, multimedia, spec fiction mega mind. We are pleased to have PG Holyfield on the Skype line with us. PG, welcome to the show, man.
Oh, thank you once again, and I've heard esteemed and award winning, and icon. I guess the check it has to be mailed out anytime now.
Dude, Lord. when you do as much as you've done for you know, I don't mean to like turn this into a big epic dramatic thing, but anybody that finishes a book and puts it out there, I mean. Dude, I hear authors, you know, worrying and nattering at this, that, and the other. It's like, dude, you finished a book. That's major.
And we do not consider those to be embellishments.
No, straight up. So
well, thank you.
You've been living with yourself for too long. Let us German fanboy just a little bit.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's been a while since I finished the podcast novel, so I've been away from that sort of talk. So
well, okay,
It's good to hear.
It's still out there, is what's happening.
And what I want to know is, Master Holyfield, what are you doing now to reawaken those kudos and accolades that fall like manna from heaven upon your head?
Oh Lord.
No pressure. What do you got?
Well, the main thing I'm working on right now is the Specfic Media's Beyond the Wall podcast, which is obviously a Game of Thrones reference there. We talk about the HBO show. We just started our season two since the show on HBO just started season two.
Okay.
I do that with Christiana Ellis.
Oh, very cool.
Writer.
And, we've got to get Christiana on the show, too.
Yeah, she should have her on. She's very funny and very great writer. And Chooch and Viv, who have their own separate podcast that they work on.
Right.
Geek-related podcasts. And Nuchas, she has her own geek-related podcast, and we've become friends at all the conventions we go to, so we decided to do this last year, and it's been a lot of fun. I've become the, you know, curmudgeon, the you know, the old man that has complaints. Everybody else is waxing poetic about, you know, the show, and I'm like, you know,
get off my lawn, damn kids.
Yeah. I'm the one that gets the hate mail, which is fun. I enjoy that. So that's been my main creative thrust. But
where can people tune in to the Beyond the Wall podcast?
Yeah, there's actually two Beyond the Wall podcasts. So we actually both started them around the same time, and we both said we don't care, you know, go ahead and keep the name. And but ours is that we call it Specfic Media Presents Beyond the Wall. So you can find that at specficmedia.com. There's a you know, podcast link there, and that'll give you all the info on that. Of course, we had season one of our podcast last year, and we had a little preview show last week, and I'm still working on our first episode, which is our, you know, review of the season premiere, and you know, some other things as well. So it's a lot of fun. It's not safe for work, so
it's labeled explicit on iTunes.
Yes, and it's just a lot of fun.
Outstanding.
My other big project that's still in its infancy, and we'll get to it as far as getting it started. But I've been working on a science fiction novel, which is sort of a Earth is going to be destroyed, and we need to find another, you know, planet to save humanity.
Sweet
story. But as I was writing the story, the first thing that happened was one of my good friends, Patrick McLean, who you definitely need to get on the show sometime. He's a very, very good writer, and he's also a hilarious guy. And he read my, you know, synopsis of, because it's basically a murder mystery on the spaceship. And he says, well, your story's crap, which is what he always says to anything that I, you know, present to him. He said, but the background and your, you know, the reason they're out there, that's the television series. And he said, you need to write a TV pilot. Now, I've never written anything like that. I've written some one-act plays, that sort of thing. So I started looking into that as far as the process of writing, you know, writing for time, writing in screenplay form and all of that.
Holy crap, are you going to write a TV pilot?
Well, yeah, that's the plan. So
that's awesome.
So in the process of doing that and learning, I used to be on the Dead Robot Society podcast.
Oh, yes, yes. Word out to Justin. I forgot to mention that during your kudos in the 20 minutes with. Bad on me.
So I've been involved in writing podcasts. But I was thinking, why don't I, you know, while I'm doing this, I could, you know, do a little. I'm wanting to do more with Specfic Media and podcasting. So I want to do something, you know, might be a little educational, just about, you know, writing for TV. Not that I'm an expert, but I know enough people, you know, in the podcasting community and other communities that I could have people on to talk about things.
Well, sure, and then your audience could learn while you learn.
Right, and then I decided, because, and you and I talked about this, Dave, just that I've been involved with shared universes and writing with other people, and I've done things where, you know, audience participation has always been big with me when it comes to these things, which is one of the reasons I did Tales of the Children, which is my podcast, which is short stories that are in the world that my novel is set in.
And those are available at pgholyfield.com?
Yes. And awesome. I decided I'm going to be writing this TV pilot, but why don't I take it to the next level and say, okay, I'm going to write, or I'm going to propose to the audience of this show, which I don't have a name for yet, other than Specfic Media presents the show. And it's going to be part educational, part documentary, part feedback from the audience, and part audience participation, where we're going to map out and write a TV season for this show.
Oh, wow. Holy crap. That's huge.
It's going to be not only for people that want to do the writing, but I'm also going to do things for musicians and artists and you know, people, anybody wants to get involved. And so part of it's going to be like a game show thing where people can submit, you know, story ideas or treatments or what have you, and we'll have you know, I'll be doing video stuff on Ustream, and we'll see what we can do with this. We're going to try to raise some money through Kickstarter, and the eventual end point of this will be either an audio drama, which will be, you know, the story that we come up with as a group.
Sure.
You know, is an audio dramatic form. But if it gets big enough, and, you know, if I can use Kickstarter and raise money and maybe, you know, reach out and try to get investors, try to do a web series. So actually do an actual, you know, web video show.
And everybody gets to participate and observe the creative process from beginning to end.
Right.
And that's got legs, man. That's got major legs.
Yep. And every piece of it, there'll be contests. So like if, you know, if I have an artist that comes up with a storyboard of a scene that we've written, we may have a contest for a musician to write music to go with that scene and have, you know, the audience vote on it. Whoever gets the most votes, you know, wins some money or something. So we're going to have, you know, we're going to see what we can do with this and have some fun with it.
Outstanding. Dude, definitely.
It's got audience building built into it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Because people will be intrigued to see, did what I vote for win, and then what is the finished product? And so you'll just have more and more people tuning in. I think that's fabulous.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, yeah.
So that's the plan anyway, but it's months before anything would be on the air, or not even on the air, but in podcast form, just starting to, you know, lay the groundwork, because I've got to build a business plan, because this is a lot bigger than anything.
Yeah, this isn't, you know, this isn't audiobook.
Attempted, so.
This isn't right audiobooks.com. This is epic.
This is huge.
But yeah. But it's groundbreaking, you know, and really no one's ever done that before. That's dude, you have our email addresses. Keep us in the loop.
Absolutely.
That sounds huge. All right. How about we take a short promotional break, and when we get back, let's bring on our guest writer and do a little workshopping, eh?
Sounds good.
Sounds like fun to me.
I couldn't agree more. All right, folks, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What are you doing for Memorial Day weekend this year?
I've got the best working vacation planned ever.
I'll be sitting on a panel talking about social media promotion.
I am hanging out with my friends from all over the country and even across the globe.
I'm hitting up several of the writing panels, anything that involves superpowers, but also that gritty sci-fi thriller vibe.
I am going to be hanging out with the largest collection of podcasters in America.
I'm probably going to kill someone.
Sigler! No! Bad author! Bad!
There will be at least one writing morning at the nearby Panera. I hear it's where all of the cool folks go for coffee.
I am spreading myself far too thin and going on both a podcasting track and the literary track.
So, where am I spending this amazing weekend?
At Balticon.
I'm going to 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 Balticon. Shouldn't you be going too? That's Balticon, the Maryland Regional Science Fiction and Fantasy Convention, held Memorial Day weekend each year. For more information, go to balticon.org.
And we are back. And let's not mince any more words, waste any more time, or dally about any longer with any more cliched phrases about wasting time. let's roll into the master phase of the Roundtable Podcast and get our guest writer out here. Ladies and gentlemen, it's my pleasure to introduce to you a bold gentleman who has crafted an epic tale, and I can't wait for you guys to hear it. Please welcome to the line, Mr. Dan Eagles. Dan, welcome to the show, man. Thanks for being on.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know how this game is played. First, we want to know a little bit about you. So tell us where you're from, what you do, and how you got into writing.
All right. Well, I live down in Orange County, my wife and I and our four kids. So I have a bunch of little vectors running around. And I work for a medical device company. And back in 2008, and this sounds really cliche, but I actually had a dream. And it actually is described in the first chapter of the book. And it was kind of the space needle out in the middle of the national forest. And you kind of wonder, I got to thinking, how would anybody build that out in the middle of the national forest given the government? So from there, I put it down on paper and wrote about 30 minutes almost every day in my car at work on a PDA. And that's how I finished this thing.
Oh, wow. Holy smokes. All right. Well, let's hear about this magnum opus that you've been tapping away on. We'll give you 5 to 8 minutes. So keep it tight. Give us as much information as you can, and once we get that out there, we'll start talking about it.
All right. The main character is a gentleman by the name of Paul Schobert, and he has some very interesting powers. When he was a younger man, he found a ring in the desert, and over time, he's developed these abilities from the ring. He can't be crushed, he can't be burnt, radiated, frozen, drowned. The best thing is he can become invisible. I mean, imagine what we could do with that. And so he's really he's a pretty moral stand-up guy. He has a family, and he's taken his powers and ripped off casinos and used the money as venture capital money and started a firm for emerging medical device companies. And being the moral person that he is, he's making a lot of money. He's paying them back. The big tragedy that happens here is that there is an accident, or actually an earthquake, that unleashes a virus that devastates the world. So that's kind of the world building that I'm doing. The 90% of the people have died or become infected, and there's about 10% of the people who have immunity. So as Paul finds out, he does have immunity, and he's just absolutely devastated when his family dies. And so he finds out that not only is he protected by the ring, but he has a natural immunity in and of itself, and the ring's not letting him end his own life. So he's kind of trapped like the Burgess Meredith character in The Twilight Zone. Kind of the second group of characters is the Marines up in the Marine Corps Mount Warfare Training Center up in up near Pickle Meadows up by Bridgeport, California. And when the virus hit, they locked everything down. And so they're maintaining, and they're kind of starting to say, okay, what do we need to do to survive long term? The third group are a bunch of scientists and politicians locked down in the Large Hadron Collider facility in Geneva, Switzerland. So as scientists are and scientists would be, they can be oblivious to whatever's going on in the outside world. And they're actually just continuing to experiment. And there was a lot of fol-de-rol when the collider opened that there was going to be a black hole and it was going to swallow the Earth. So I took kind of some of that fear, and as naturally as a scientist myself, I'm interested in that kind of thing, and in what could you do with it. So as everybody starts moving forward, and it's kind of in a parallel path, Paul goes north up into the Sierras, and because he figures, I don't have any family left. I've lost them. I'm just going to go up here and be like Jedediah Smith. And he runs into this kid along the way, and the kid ends up dying. So he's got this nagging thought in the back of his mind that, hey, everybody I meet is going to end up dying, and even though I've got these essentially superpowers, I can't do anything about it. I'm helpless. So if you look at the Marines kind of at the parallel path, they're starting to plan and saying, hey, how can we get more food? How can we get more ordnance? How can we get more equipment? This thing isn't going to last forever, and, we need to be able to survive. In the same token, over in the Large Hadron Collider facility, the scientists have now opened they know how to open wormholes to send not only things across distances, but also time. And there is an Irish politician by the name of Siobhan Farley who talks with these two physicists, and she says, hey, guys, we have nothing to lose. Let's go for it. There is communication between the Marine Corps, the Large Hadron Collider facility, the different governments on kind of an emergency net, and so they do know what the root cause was of this virus being unleashed, it was an earthquake and a piece of equipment ran into a reactor vessel. There was some mutation. It bloomed. Everybody goes south. So as Paul is heading north along 395, he runs into this other guy named Wheelman, and he's an ex-Harvard law turned marine turned logistics expert, along with his dog. And, you know, Paul and Wheelman are both very happy to meet each other. So, you know, they're both kind of running alone. They're used to working alone, but they're happy to have the company. So Paul says to him, "Hey, I'm headed up here." Wheelman says, "Hey, I know it." So the next part of the book is their trip up there. Well, Paul Wheelman, since he's in logistics, has a large truck with a bunch of gas and a bunch of equipment. And when they get to, if you've ever gone up to 395 in California, it's mountainous region. It's on the way up to Mammoth, and keep on going, you up to Tahoe. And there's a Mammoth Lakes Airport. And so they decide to stop there and essentially fly up the rest of the way and over the Warfare Training Center. They meet with the commanding officer, and he says, "Hey, you know, the stuff you have in your truck is really valuable. We'll put you guys in a fire team in a helicopter and go down and pick it up." Well, of course, they go down. They crash. Things get really bad. So now they have to drive the truck back up there, which all these towns are really inhabited by these infectums, which I call them. So along to the time they get to Bridgeport, you know, things really hit the fan, because essentially the entire infected population of Bridgeport descends upon them and take them out. And so the bad thing is that one of the Marines is actually one that's taken him out because he got infected. And so once again, Paul is going through this, "God, what did I do? You know, everything I touch," you know, kind of the Charlie Brown syndrome, if you will. So in the parallel path, the scientists have sent through the robot into this lab and tried to secure this piece of equipment. And in effect, they failed. And instead of running into what I have called the rabies vaccination, they not only knock over the reaction vessel for the rabies, but also the Marburg virus. So the infectums actually mutate even more. They get bigger and they get smart and they're able to communicate. There's a key figure in here, and it was kind of what you had talked about with Aramis Cregan and Aaron Pertie, but it's probably more of a Luke and Yoda. I've got this old Swedish lady called the Chief, and Paul throughout this time has been having these visions in his dreams, but he can't really, you know, it's kind of like when you get the eye drops for getting your eyes checked, and, you know, and they send you out on your way to try to drive home, and you can't see because everything's blurry. That's kind of the you know, the vision that he's had. Nothing's clear. But the Chief asks him a bunch of questions, and he starts developing a better idea of things. And so after things go haywire at the airport, he goes back to her, and he essentially, she says, "Listen, you need to find this, you know, you need to go to this tunnel." And so things are starting to pick up, and he finds out that you know, some things about his family that he didn't know. So it's, you know, it's preserving the family is really the driver. So from there, there's a series of adventures where they end up being successful. And most of that is really just action. So that's pretty much it in a nutshell.
Holy smokes. I think I have more ink on my paper than I have paper on my paper. That's so huge.
Yeah, I tried to really distill it down and not. I told it to my friend the other day at lunch, and after an hour and a half, I was still talking. And I told him about the podcast. And I said, "Listen, I got to get some Cliff Notes on this thing." So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, and you know, at this point, let's go ahead and talk about what we got here, because there's, holy smokes, there's a lot of material, a lot of events, characters, plot elements. We'll defer first to our guest host, PG. What are your first impressions of Dan's story?
Well, I definitely like what he has. You know, a little bit of the Stand type of thing with the multiple storylines and trying to figure out what's going on, and then you've got, you know, the scientist trying to fix, you know, fix what has happened. The only thing that the first thing that struck me is, you started out with the story of the guy with the ring, and the ring, just the ring itself, just doesn't fit at all within the rest of the story, unless you've got, you know, a reason for it.
Should I just give away the spoiler then?
I'd say go for it.
Okay, so the ring allows him to essentially go through the wormhole when no organic thing can go through there unless they turn into fertilizer at the other end. So there's it's kind of this reason for why he has it. And he's able to go through, secure the irradiator, which is really kind of benign in terms of action. You know, I put some nuts on some studs on the floor and that's it. But it allows him to go through and then come back. So you've preserved your physics, your conservation of energy, and then, you know, the whole thing, time kind of shifts and he remains invisible such that people really don't know why he's there. You know, they don't know he's there, and so kind of everything goes back to normal.
Is the ring something that has come from the future that gives him these abilities? I mean,
it is alien. What I've kind of left is that there's still some mystery about where this thing came from, but he is essentially the keeper of it.
I think that probably the only real comment is you've got so many different stories going on. You've got the alien ring, giving him these superpowers, and so you have that level of story. Then you have the virus that is turning people into, you know, zombies and then larger mutants, which is, you know, a good story. And you have the action story of the scientist trying to figure out how to stop it. Just from on the surface, and I think you can do it if you do it well, is making all of these different disparate story types and stories fit together and make it work. Yeah. And that's the only thing that I think that might be a hard sell or might be hard to accomplish is to say, you know, just all of these things going on at once and being able to do it.
It's a big challenge.
There's been some. I'm kind of coming from an interesting perspective because I've written it, and so I've been able to work out. You know, kind of one of the things I wanted to talk about is what assumptions can I make and somewhat pass the red face test. You know, for example, if you have a secure facility like the LHC and the Marine Warfare Training Center, you know, I proposed in my book that, listen, there'd still be some skeleton of communications going. You know, the president's locked down in Cheyenne Mountain. You've got USAMRID, you know, working in Fort Detrick. You've got these military bases that have kind of hunkered down, and they're still communicating. And they've communicated with everybody, you know, and with the Large Hadron Collider facility, I've got not only the scientists, but all the, you know, major diplomats from the EU. They've kind of gone down the rabbit hole like, you know, the Green Bar over in North Carolina. And so you have these communications, and the key to this was the folks over at the LHC understanding what the root cause of the virus being unleashed was. And so, you know, they have these essentially, I don't want to say conference calls, but essentially they're communicating, saying, how are we going to get out of this? And the sending the robot through the wormhole is really the only glimmer of hope that they have. Now, they also have Paul Schobert, but he doesn't know how he fits into that, and he's made aware of this as he not only visits the Marines, but also, you know, the Chief. The Chief is kind of the linchpin in that.
Dan, let me jump in for just a second.
All right.
What is it that you're hoping we can give you in the next 40, half hour or so?
I would say just tips on plots, and certainly criticism.
Okay.
I sat down with really no education in terms of how to write, and I wrote.
Okay.
So it's been, I just kind of mentally figured out how I would develop the characters and where the plot would go, and then say, okay, if I sat down and read this, obviously I know I'm reading a work of fiction, but is it plausible? You know, and I think that's probably, you know, does it pass the sniff test in sort of, you know, a fiction plausibility realm.
Dude, in a world where Clive Cussler has dozens of books out there, I think plausibility is the least of your worries.
Sorry. I think it's part of my nature.
Brian, what do you got on that topic?
All right, I'm going to jump in. I got a couple things. One kind of playing off of PG a little bit. I totally agree that you've got all these different elements, and I don't see what ties them together yet. And I don't know if that's a spoiler or not, but I'm almost wondering if, for me, it would seem that the ring or the appearance of the ring needs to also have something to do with the appearance of the plague.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you've got Deus Ex Machina.
Right, that just this ring appears out of nowhere, and he happens to get it and happens to be the one to go through the wormhole. And so if it's something where he gets the ring and somehow that releases the... So he's almost responsible for it. I don't know. The other thing that I was curious about is it seems to me the way that you're presenting Paul, he starts off... You know, he's got these powers and that's awesome, and he's doing some fun stuff with it. And then everybody dies that he cares about, or at least as far as he knows. And, you know, you were talking about him just kind of wanting to go off into the woods and just be a hermit. And so suddenly I don't see any motivation for him to really do anything. And from that point forward, a lot of things just happen to him. And he's not putting himself in fate's way. He's not actively pursuing anything, you know, because of a desire that he has. So what is it that's driving him?
He's not being a protagonist.
Right. Yeah. He's just sort of being an observer. And so what will make me as a reader want to follow him if he doesn't really know what he wants to do? Or does he, and we just haven't gotten that part of it?
Part of that is kind of described by the dreams that he has, but I kind of purposely wrote it by that because, you know, after a loss like this, you know, if you had the ring or not, you'd be suffering from depression. And so, you know, I kind of said, okay, his family dies and he goes up and, there's why I was talking to my friend for an hour and a half. You know, he goes up and he finds his in-laws. They're passed away. And so he kind of pushing him on as he's just trying to escape the death and devastation. And when he finally gets up to the woods where he wants to be, the house where he goes, this hunting cabin where he wants to be, it's, of course, burnt down. So, you know, every kind of, you can have great powers, but he's got really bad luck. So he does kind of stay there, and he's enjoying it, and the book kind of...
Let me interrupt and jump in for just a sec, Dan. You've clearly got a lot of detail and a lot of plot element. You've written this thing already for all intents and purposes. Rather than guide us through the minutiae of each plot event and type, can you pull back 30,000 feet and talk about Paul's arc? Talk about his progression from a guy that rips off casinos and then pays them back once he's rich to a guy who wants to become a hermit and disappear to the guy who ultimately is going to save the world. I mean, do you have an arc in mind? Do you have events tuned to transform this guy from, you know, basically a guy who's wasting godlike power for all intents and purposes into being someone who can save the world?
Yeah. So he starts out regular guy, finds the ring. He uses it and really enjoys his life with it, does a lot of traveling, but he uses that power of the ring to further medical devices and you know, and through venture capital, emerging.
So he's Bruce Wayne. He's sponsoring technology and so on.
So then you get to the point where his family dies and he almost falls apart. And, you know, he's saying, hey, I have this, but why do I even want to go on? So,
see, PG, what do you see about that point? Let me jump in, Dan. Mm-hmm. PG, what do you see about that transition point right there? Can that be enhanced, do you think?
I mean, I think, you know, if you're looking at character and you're looking at your protagonist, one of the things that you always want to identify is what is their weakness and what is their need. And in giving him this ring, even though he's losing family and he doesn't really have a weakness. So there's moral growth that he can have, but I think the story would be better served, and I don't know plot-wise whether you could do it, is to make him more of an everyman without these powers. Mm-hmm. But there is something in him or some, you know, some reason that he becomes this person that, you know, can go through the wormhole. I'm afraid that you're going to have the reader just feeling, oh, he has this ring so that he can be the one to go through this wormhole. That's why he got it at the beginning of the book. You know, that sort of MacGuffin there where you have to have this, you know, magic thing happen so that he can do what needs to be done at the end of the novel. I'm afraid that's how it'll come across.
And he's impervious. So he has nothing at risk. You know, until you get him to the point where he actually cares about the world or cares about anything, there's absolutely nothing at risk. There's nothing at stake. Yes, the tragedy of the loss of his family is heart-wrenching, but as PG says, he has no need. There's nothing driving him, and there's nothing for us to glom onto to say, yes, go, Paul, go, do this, do something, you know, right. Achieve something great.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, yeah, I understand what you guys are saying. And part of his motivation, like I said, is the death. And so he's just... And you know, this could be an issue, but he's just kind of ambling along because it's crazy. He's got the superpowers, but he has no clue of what he can do with them. It's these external forces that are trying to kind of push him towards the point and kind of get his fire lit again. There's a pivotal point in the book where he's talking with the chief. This is the second time he's talked with her. And he mentions, he says, you know, your wife and your four children. And he says, you know, he thinks to himself, wait a minute, I don't have four children. And then he remembers before everybody got sick, his wife had been feeling ill, and that was actually the kind of the symptoms of morning sickness. And so it's kind of at that point he kicks in overdrive because the pieces have now fallen into place, and he knows what to do. So up until that point, he's getting motivated and pushed along just kind of to travel based on these things that have happened.
This is the challenge for us, Dan. Because this is basically mapped out and written, I don't know about you, Brian, and you, PG, but I'm really hesitant to offer any suggestions. All of my suggestions are huge. All right, all of my suggestions
and
are epic.
Change your manuscript
exactly, and literally have to send you back to the drawing board. And I'm feeling a little hamstrung in terms of being able to offer some of the stuff that I can offer. You know, PG, I don't know where you're sitting now. Are you feeling the same way?
Yeah, I mean, when we get down to, you know, you have it written. You've got, again, like I said before, you've got these different story types going on. Going back to like something like The Stand, where you do have this completely separate thing. You've got the virus and the everybody dying, and then you've got the religious aspects, and you've got all the different main characters. Sound like you're doing something like that, where you have different, you know, storylines going on with different main characters. But again, the one thing that sort of keeps coming back to me is that I'm worried about the character you start with, and the fact that he has this ring that it just doesn't. And again, you mentioned that, you know, it's part of this whole thing about the dreams and might make it work, but I'm just worried more about that. Is that okay? We have an alien ring. That's how we're going to get this guy through the wormhole, and that you know, I'm afraid that's how it'll come across.
Well, let me offer a suggestion here, and Dan, I think you'll be able to get the most out of what Brian, PG, and I can offer if you let us riff on this for a little bit.
Sure.
And let us forget for a moment that this is a complete story. And pretend it's a story idea,
right?
And let us tear the hell out of your manuscript and explore some of those creative venues that kind of freedom lets us explore. Are you cool with that?
Yeah, I absolutely. Yeah,
and this might be a really good place to do our customary, you know.
Please, Brian, by all means.
So, considering everything that Dave just said, we're gonna play and we're gonna throw out a bunch of what ifs and we're gonna tear the thing apart and you're gonna feel compelled to defend and say, oh wait, that, you know, I did this and I did that and this makes, because you have all of that knowledge. So anything that we say during this episode could and very likely is complete and total crap.
Absolutely. Utter twaddle. Even out of PG's mouth.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. So, most of what I say is twaddle.
So you can throw everything away, but, you know, then going back when you're doing your revision or whatever it is, there may be one or two things that kind of play that take you into your own other areas where you go, oh, I can do this to kind of clean this up, and it may be spawned from something that we mentioned.
Yep.
So so we're just going to play.
Yes. Yeah. And my first suggestion is the Chief. Is probably one of the coolest sounding characters of everyone that you mentioned, even though she got like maybe four sentences of your description.
Yeah.
I always glom on the wise woman who sees beyond the veil of reality, blah, blah, blah. And I would say put the Chief in early. Don't wait until it looked like about act three before the Chief made an appearance. If you can make the Chief like kind of a, and again, this is just a suggestion, but I don't know, a street person or somebody that weaves in and out of Paul's life that he always, you know, kind of turned to for, you know, maybe guidance or, you know, I'm feeling down, so I'll go to the park, maybe I'll find this homeless woman Chief and she can set me on the right path, blah, blah, blah. And so later on when she manifests as this wise person, there's more of a shock and awe factor, and you can get a sense, Dan can get a sense that he's been guided by the hand of destiny.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, one of my thoughts would be instead of having a ring and having it be scientific in nature as far as his the explanation is, have it be more spiritual in nature. You already have sort of the groundwork with this, you know, wise person that's helped Paul or helps Paul or what have you, you know, have him be more of an everyman, and he's being, but because of some sort of connection he has, you know, to some spiritual side that it allows him certain things. So instead of it, and I don't mean make it a religious story, I just mean that, you know, somehow it's, you know, tied to this, you know, Chief with the wisdom and that sort of thing, instead of, right, you know, just having all this power and just needs to know where to direct it to affect the outcome of the story.
Sure. And maybe the ring isn't, maybe there is a science element to it, but what it does is it unlocks the full human potential of what's going on. And through Chief's guidance, you know, maybe Paul's been able to use it, but as PG says, turning it away from a reliance on an external device,
right,
and make it very much a part of Paul's inner terrain that gives him the power.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Maybe halfway.
Kind of in terms that it just, okay, I put it on and, you know, I'm Green Lantern or something like that.
Yeah, none of that.
Right.
All right.
Or have something where halfway through the book, he, you know, his fingers get cut off and he loses the ring, but still, he still moves,
has the powers.
You know, that's his opponent or his battle and that he has to go through to, you know, to win. That's would be much more fulfilling than having power throughout and just learning how to use it.
Kind of what you were talking about is, you know, here he has this ability, but he has, later on in the book, he actually has the ability to share it. But, you know, if you have that, your kind of tendency, at least me as a father, is I'm very protective over my children. And so when I get around all these people, I know I can protect them, but you can't protect everybody all the time. And so, you know, you were talking about kind of the internal motivation. There's maybe I could, you know, say the thing's got a bad coil in it and doesn't turn over every time you turn the key, so to speak. And so sometimes he is protected, and sometimes, hey, the thing's got a short and it's not working.
Right? Well, see, and don't externalize it. Yeah,
all right.
That puts Paul beholden to the thing. That makes him that pulls the teeth of his heroism. If he's going to be a hero, Make him a hero.
I may have done a very bad thing because I had it such that essentially the ring almost took him over. And it's mm-hmm. morphed through his skin and actually integrated into his bone. So if you look at his hand, it doesn't look like he has a ring on, but it's there in his bone. So
perhaps. Oh, yeah, he's got to hack that thing off of the wrist. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe I just drove off the interstate with that, but
yeah. I'm gonna go in a couple directions because one of the things that I was thinking about, if the ring, you said something about that there are other pieces of where it came from, or there's a ship or something to that effect.
That is correct.
Did you mention that? Okay. Yeah. So my when you were talking about how he's virtually indestructible, and then he loses everybody, and he goes into this deep depression, it almost reminded me of, I don't remember if it was the second or the third Highlander movie, where at the very beginning he's got the prize, and it allows him to have all this knowledge, but it ends up like ruining the world that he's in, and curses him. And so here you have this cursed protagonist who wants to die, can't die no matter what he does. Then maybe what he really wants, or what's driving him, is to find those other pieces that maybe the military has in order to find some way to reverse this.
Yeah.
You know? So that's one direction. The other thing that I was thinking is, if you don't go with the ring, you have this disease, and you have these infectums, and you talked about a mutation. So maybe he gets the disease at some point and happens to be one of the only people who overcomes it. And because of that, it stays within him and continues to mutate. And that's what awakens or gives him certain abilities. Mm. And then the more that the infectums mutate, the more that he mutates in a different direction.
Right. One of the things, and you've mentioned the infectums and different things. You know, one of the things we haven't gotten a real clear feel for is, you know, what is the opponent, or what is going against them other than the virus itself and what it does. So, like in what you were mentioning, him, you know, having some reason to go against the military, go try to find, you know, maybe he's trying to find the ship that the military's taken because of what the ring is doing to him. So that there is that sort of conflict going on, other than, oh, we need to travel here and we need to keep going and try to find, you know, where to go, have a reason why they're, going to these places, and, so they can end up in where they need to end up at the end of the story.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree with PG on that. The who the antagonist is and what mm-hmm. they're fighting against is kind of vague, and without a clear antagonist who's throwing roadblocks in the way, even if it's nature or whatever. And in this case, what is at stake? Dan, is the world going to end at some point?
Well, I think originally, hadn't you listed like time as the antagonist?
Time and information are the antagonists. So you essentially reach a tipping point where the people that aren't infected will end up dying. And so essentially, Earth goes back to nature. And it's, you know, one of the things is, you know, how fragile all our technology is. So he is one of those, kind of the character that would, he's fearing being that last person left on Earth. Because potentially that could happen. The favor could tip, biology takes over, the infectums finally, pass away, and here he is, and he's definitely by himself. He's never going to find anybody else. And he's kind of trapped there and says, listen, I can't commit suicide, and I'm going to live another, 50 years. I'm going to go start raving mad.
Yeah.
But, I understand what you guys are saying about the ring, and it has kind of presented some of his problems to say, listen, what excitement can the character that's always protected going to have, other than maybe some, cool trivial adventures? But, I tried to take it beyond that to, how does he care for the people around him? And, how does he share that wealth? So, I like your guys' idea. You brought up The Stand, and I read that so long ago, and I never even thought about it, and now I'm going,
it's The Stand meets awesome. Mad Max.
Right.
Holy crap.
So, Yeah, I mean, I've got a copy of The Road, Cormac McCarthy's book, sitting on my shelf, and I'm just waiting to get this done so I can read it.
let me throw something out here, just something that might tie this all together. As we've been talking, some themes have been teasing out, and you actually, Dan, brought it up. This whole thing of life and death, all right? And again, when you were first describing The Ring, I wrote down impervious and put a star next to it. And you know, a man who is impervious physically and you know, all of that, what really could be very cool is if he's also become impervious emotionally. Mm-hmm. If by being so invulnerable, he has become so disconnected from the world. You know, you have him ripping off casinos and then paying him back. Don't. Have him be...
Right.
Have him surrender to that, yeah, and have the one touchstone in his life be his family, his wife, his children, and they discover, oh my God, she's pregnant. And maybe that moment, you know, in the very beginning of the book, he might actually turn the tide and see, oh my God, there's more to life than anything. And then before the earthquake and before the virus, have the family die.
All right.
And have his reason for existence and going on be swept out from under him. And have him try to commit suicide. And he can't. He cannot die. And then the earthquake happens. And now the world is dying. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this is turning into a really dark frickin' story. But you've got the infectants. And he can walk among the infectants freely because he's impervious.
Right.
And he becomes a carrier. He's got virus plague dripping off of him, and he becomes death.
Which is why anybody that he comes into contact with, that he tries to form a relationship, ends up getting sick.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And until in the end, he learns about this Hadrian Collider and this wormhole and thinks, ah, maybe I can die here.
Right.
And now he has something to work for. He's become kind of an anti-hero in this scenario.
Yeah.
But now there's a unifying force. It's kind of a dark force, I'll grant you. But now he has a very clear and specific goal. The adventures that he undergoes take on purpose and meaning. And you have a theme that you can balance with the Marines and with the scientists, because they're struggling for life. He's struggling for death. And you've got this epic conflict. I honestly don't know how it would manifest, but yeah, there's a unifying theme that I don't know, you might be able to weave in some way.
It's almost like Mel Gibson's character in Lethal Weapon, where he's extremely self-destructive, yet, you know, he's driven to that higher purpose. You know, that's, and maybe the wormhole's the only thing that can crush him into oblivion.
Exactly.
He thinks that, but it's spits him out on the other side, and you know, he gets a kick in the butt to say, hey, you know, go fix this thing. And you know,
PG, what do you think? Am I off the rails on that?
No, I like it a lot. I mean, I think the main thing you need to think about is integrating your different stories in such a way that it makes sense. So that you can, you know, so that, like you said, you have reason for the ring. And it ties into everything else, and you know, maybe that builds an antagonist for you because somebody knows about the ring and wants it or something of that nature. Another book I would recommend reading that might help is The Passage by Justin Cronin. It's another virus mutation. Actually, they vampires, I guess, for lack of a better term. But it's there's. You know, there's spiritual stuff. There's a lot of good science, and again, you know, multiple storylines with different groups that sort of fits in with what you're doing. So it might give you some ideas.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that last thing because I, you know what, I guess one of my fears was that the character was just a little bit too squeaky clean. And so, you know, what demons does he have lurking under the surface and that he may not even know are there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
The other thing is, if it seems like everybody is kind of hung up on the ring because it is so Green Lantern almost, you know, what if it's just shrapnel? What if he's there when something crashes?
And what if it's nothing at all? What if he's just impervious?
It could be nothing at all. But if you're, you know, if you're set on this piece of metal or whatever it is that is, you know, infuses itself into his bones and that it is some kind of external influence, maybe it's just the fact that it's a ring that's causing such a hang up for so many people, you know, and you can morph that into something else. That then he doesn't necessarily stumble upon it. It's something that's thrust into him, which can give him a little more resentment for it too, that it's not just, you know, oh, I found this and so I screwed myself, as much as I didn't ask for this. It you know, I was stuck with it, which is kind of the same thing as the disease, you know,
to tie into scientists. Maybe he was part of some sort of a blind test, and this was some sort of weird serum that these scientists who had created the virus that have created these infectants to begin with injected him with. And so he feels resentment towards them and is going to, you know, with his new imperiosity and new lack of love of life, is going to go take it out on the scientists. And that's what gets him to the Hadrian Collider and blah, blah, blah.
And then we have the movie version of I Am Legend.
Yeah. Only in reverse, because he wants to destroy everything.
Right. But the idea in the movie where it was, you know, we're trying to find a cure for cancer, and we end up turning everybody into weird CGI vampires.
Well, yeah, there is that.
You know, so that, I mean, I'm not discounting what you said.
No, that's
at
a good
all.
Point. That's
I'm
a
just
good
saying
point.
That there is a little bit of a parallel with that.
Yeah.
There, you know, there is, you know, that I read both Richard Matheson and as well saw the movie and enjoyed both, and you know, I'd actually already started this before I read both of those, and you know, that kind of genre has always intrigued me. So it's kind of the, you know, the lone man in the world, and the world is always your oyster, but you know, you don't have anything to harvest the oysters with, or you don't have a knife to get in it once you find it. So the, you know, the kind of the story or the world that I set was, you know, I did kind of have that in mind, and you know, my character has to move through that, and as well as anybody else.
Sure. Now your military, I get the feel everybody seems very neutral to me, and I think that was one of my big questions for you, is that the military seemed kind of neutral, the guys at the Hadron thing seemed very neutral, and it didn't seem like anybody was very nefarious or that anybody was going to be working against him.
Or particularly virtuous, for that matter.
Right, yeah, exactly. They were just sort of right in the middle. And so how are you looking at those two different groups? Because if you have one that seems like it could be very beneficial to him, but they have their own intents and they have their own ideas of how to save the world, and it's very different, or it turns out to be very different than what he's seeking, you know, then that could be a really good plot device for
you. I kind of thought about that too. I said, you know, who's the Dr. Smith in this whole thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, what is you know, Dr. Smith's motivation was always, you know, I want to get home. Well, you know, I did kind of struggle with that, because all these people are essentially battened down and then they're in one area. You know, I did struggle a little bit with what are the motivations for these people in terms of, other than survival, to do something kind of against the grain.
And if you have a character, one in particular, who's looking at this saying, the world is gone, everybody's dead, and, you know, who gives a shit about ethics anymore? Then you could do some really interesting things.
You know, and you can see, you could paint the Marines, and we don't want to paint the Marines in a bad light, but so the Marines look around and say, all right, civilization's dead. I mean, this is obviously, these are the only Marines you mentioned, so I'm assuming they're the last Marines on Earth.
Other than other bases, but they're, you know, they're out of the picture.
Exactly. So, and I would say get rid of the other bases too. These are the last Marines on Earth. Don't go halfway. I mean, you're painting with a broad stroke here, Dan. So don't mince. If there's, now there might be four or five. No, this is the last one. You know, make it everything riding on each one of these three things you've got going. And put it all on a knife's edge. So these Marines look around and say, oh, well, okay, the world's fucked. We're going to start new right here. You know, we are not the United States of America. We are, you know, Wolverines or what the heck ever.
Right.
But instead of trying to maintain the civil authority and protect the president and do all the things that Marines do. They're saying, no, we are the most heavily ordnanced group around here. We are not only going to survive, but we are the new Earth. Bam, there's their name right there.
Right, and let the leader of them start collecting ears on a necklace. You know, just some crazy conflict in there.
Actually, you guys bring up a great point because I do have that, because the Marines are itchy and they're already starting to try to world build.
Well, so, and there you go, and push them over, push them past that, so that when Paul finally does get there. There, it's not I'm dealing with Marines who are trying to maintain order. It's I'm dealing with a fortified fortress of you know, maybe not fanatics, but people that have a very different agenda than I thought they were.
Yeah, a la 28 Days Later.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, and you've got different, you know, unlike some of these other stories we've talked about, you know, you've got stuff going on in Geneva, you know, so you have to deal with what, you know, how the rest of the world is reacting to this, which could be completely different. You know, obviously you're going to have ultra religious, you know, organizations that are, you know, whatever's left of them and whatever's left of civilization, probably blaming, you know, something on the scientific community. And so you've got, you know, lots of opportunities for antagonists in there as well.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And what you could do, and I want, one of the suggestions that I offer out and then I apply to myself a lot, is when you've glommed onto something and it's really like anchored in there, turn it around 180 degrees and see how that fits.
Mm-hmm. So,
and along those lines, what if the chief is not Paul's ally? What if Paul is, you know, the dark face of life, and chief is the other end of that spectrum, and they're actually working against each other? Between them, there's a continuum of chief wanting to let civilization die and let Earth return to its natural order. Paul just wants things to die because he's hurting and he's in pain. You got the other quadrant of the Marines trying to rebuild their civilization, not, you know, in their order. And then you got the scientists trying desperately to just bring everything back to the way it was. There's four very passionate, very strong themes, each one of them in utter and absolute conflict with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've got some mojo, baby. Now you can tell a story.
And I would say, don't let Paul brood for too long.
No, hell no.
Because the longer he does, the sooner we're going to give up on him. And maybe it's Wheelman and his dog that are the ones that kind of turn him around. And he sees, here's this guy with a dog and the world's gone to shit, but he still has this love for this dog. And maybe, you know, don't kill the dog because my wife will kill you.
No.
You know, but something in that will, you know, maybe that'll kind of open his eyes a little bit. I don't know. But don't let him have this everything sucks and you know, I want to kill myself for too long, because then we'll give up on him.
And you actually hit upon a very strong point of the book, where he's, you know, he's kind of making his way up to the training center, and he does run into Wheelman, and he's the first person that he's seen since he's left Orange County that is actually okay. He's not hurt, and he has a dog, and the dog happened to be the same kind that he had with his family. So, yeah, I've got. I mean, looking at that, it's that's kind of where everything really picks up and starts going. In terms of, hey, the character's mental outlook does change, and so
good.
And you know, you were saying, you know, don't kill the dog. I won't kill the dog. I never will. And I also have poop jokes. So,
awesome.
You've got a
winner right there, baby.
That's right. Okay. Yeah, we're done. That's awesome.
With the poop joke.
Dan, was there anything in particular you wanted to ask PG about in terms of the story?
Well, I think the main thing was just really kind of asking UPG about the kind of the storyline and the plot, and you know what you thought about the kind of the tenacity and the will of the character. That things are looking down, but you know, the character continues to kind of drive for that solution. And I kind of wanted to get your feelings on how, you know, is my main character plausible in that sense.
I think so, and I think the, you know, as Dave and Brian have been, you know, taking it to darker extents, there's definitely a lot of examples of anti-heroes or you know, protagonists that don't really fit the mold, so to speak, that that you can play off of and do really well with. And I think probably the most important thing is that each of these storylines, we focused on Paul without focusing too much on, you know, what are the scientists doing and what are, you know, the Marines doing. And if these are as fully fleshed out as these characters and you have, spaced out the plot well enough and mixed things up well enough to have those be equal, then you have a much better chance of success with this type of story. If it's the focus is on Paul, but we're going to cut away for chapters to deal with what the scientists are doing, then you're going to have a little bit harder time because you don't really care about that part of the story as a reader, and you just want to get back to Paul. So if you've got those plot lines going, make sure that there are characters and that there are things going on that are either tied to Paul and you can, you know, make those connections as a reader and get more out of that story, or there's, you know, danger, you know, like we were talking about the, if the Hadron Collider location is being attacked by, you know, the infected or by religious zealots or by whomever that as this is going on, then you got, you know, multiple things that the reader is going to care about, and you gotta look for that.
All right.
Dan, can I suggest another book too? There's a book called Year Zero by Jeff Long.
Okay.
And that's a plague that wipes out 98% of the population, and everybody goes down to south of the border. There's a facility, and it's very bleak, but there's always something driving the characters, and you have some really amazing antagonists. It's a fabulous book. So I'd recommend, you know, looking at that just to kind of get an idea for that too. Yeah.
Brian, right, any last thoughts to Dan before we wrap up?
Yeah. I, anytime that, you know, we can take something even as completed as it is and riff on it and have fun with it. to me, that means that there's a story there and that there's a story that wants to be told and that people will want to read. And so, you know, by all means, run with it you know, play with this, because there's a lot of really awesome stuff here.
Thank you.
So, you know, feel good about it and let us know where it goes.
Yeah.
I will most definitely, reinforce what Brian and both PG have said. There is some awesome stuff here. There's a lot of rich storytelling elements, and yeah, we did kind of riff on the dark side for a while there, but I think the thing to take away from that is, you know, in that particular scenario, what had been sort of this sort of vague progression of events that led to a conclusion suddenly became a very polarized and high stakes, tension fraught scenario. And whether you go light or dark, I think you can't go wrong by pulling the string as tight as you can, sure, raising the stakes as high as you can, and making goals as clear and vehemently as you can for all of your key characters.
Right.
And by doing that, you know, if the word wander ever comes into the discussion, you're going down the wrong road, baby.
Yeah.
Wandering is not what heroes, what villains, what that arc is driven on. That's not the fuel of how that works. So as you examine that, just keep that in mind and see where you can draw a sharper line or sharpen the edge of the knife that people are standing on, and see where that takes you.
All right. I certainly will.
Okay. PG, any closing thoughts?
I guess the only other thing to say is that if you decide that you need to tear it down and build it back up, you know, mm-hmm. don't be afraid to.
Yeah.
You know, if if this has triggered any sort of, you know, thoughts about, well, this sort of identifies some problems, that's the whole reason for this, is to be able to say, okay, well, I can make this better if I, you know, break this up and figure out a better way to do it. So don't be afraid to.
Yeah, I certainly will. It's you know, I'm worried about it maybe being a bit bloated, and as I go, you guys have given me some great some insight in criticism, and I thank all of you very much for it. It's been wonderfully entertaining, I have to say.
We are nothing for us as well. Yes,
absolutely, absolutely, and we are nothing if not entertaining. So,
and I have to say, as a novice rookie author, the podcast community and just writing community has been very, very generous. So it's really, really great, because, you know, hear these stories about getting published with the big publishing houses, but then you've got this whole community that really seems to stand up and support each other, and it's great. It's really great.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah,
I couldn't agree more. That struck Brian and I both have been struck by a couple of newbies like us coming in and being embraced by, you know, people like PG and Dan Sawyer and so on. Just amazing.
Yeah, it really is.
It's how we get free drinks at the conventions. You figure
that out, yeah? Subtext. There's that underlying motivation. Awesome. All right. Well, I'm going to officially call this episode to a close. Dan, we exact a vow from you, sir, that when you craft this thing to your contentment and put it out there and it becomes published, that you give us a call, drop us a line, let us know.
Yes, I will. Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Good luck.
Yeah.
All right, thank you, everyone.
Good luck. Good writing. God, I just love doing this. This is the greatest job in the world. If only it paid.
Exactly, right? Yeah.
So, PG, thank you so much once again for taking the time and sharing so generously. We appreciate your coming down and sitting at the round table with us for a while.
It was my pleasure. I'd do it anytime. It was great.
We may hold you to that, sir. Brian, anything before we wrap it up?
Yeah, Dan, great job and good luck, and keep us informed. And PG, thank you very much for coming on. It was a pleasure to have you. And to everybody else who's listening, like Dave said, we don't get paid for this, but we do love the moral support of comments and reviews. So run out and take a listen, and we hope that you enjoy what you hear.
Yep,
and,
absolutely.
And go right.
And go right, exactly. We'll see you guys in a few days with a new showcase and a new workshop. Until then, ideas are cheap. Turn them into stories, and then come on the Roundtable Podcast, and we'll turn it into gold for you. You folks take care. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This episode is copyrighted 2012 by the Roundtable Podcast, and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike license. That means don't sell it, but you can share it all you like. And you can even use pieces of it in your own derivative work, as long as you attribute us as the source and release the work under the same licensing terms. Theme music composed and performed by the talented Hepcats of Brotown, Gary Gold, David LaBruyere, Billy Nobel, and Matt O'Donnell. If you'd like to be a guest writer or guest host, or learn more about the Roundtable Podcast, please visit our website at www.roundtablepodcast.com. Or visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/roundtablepodcast. Our Twitter tag is at writerspodcast. Or just send us an email at thetable@roundtablepodcast.com. Thanks for listening.